This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. All right, so you got rom-com, documentary, horror, instructional. These are all categories of film that we use to sort movies into neat classifications. What about those films that defy categorization, the ones that are embarrassing to their makers or ones that capture something that never should have happened? A group of film archivists and enthusiasts will discuss how to group and preserve these films, and they're going to do it this weekend at the second Bastard Film Encounter in Raleigh. Joining me now is Skip Elsheimer. He's the founder of AV Geeks and one of the organizers of the encounter. Welcome back, Skip. Good to
have
you.
Thanks, Frank.
Also with us, Dino Everett. He is the Hugh M. Hefner archivist at the University of Southern California. Hello, Dino.
Hello.
I just, you know, it's the Hugh M. Hefner archivist, and I'm the only at the University of Southern California, I suppose.
Actually, it's one of those things where we use his name, but mainly because he was generous to write a check.
Of course.
We have no Hugh M. Hefner material whatsoever.
It's a funny picture. Yeah. Skip, what is the Bastard Film Encounter?
Such a loaded question. This is an opportunity for archivists, film collectors, film academics, and film enthusiasts to come together and watch films that are hard. Films that are hard to watch, films that are hard to describe, films that are hard to figure out, and ask questions like, what are we supposed to do with this? What is this? Why are we watching this? Things like that.
Well, stop right there. Why are we watching this and why are we doing this? Because the what was very good. I've got the what. Now the why.
Well, the why is something that we don't necessarily answer. What we did is we put out a call to our peers saying, we have this idea of this concept of a bastard film. Why don't you bring something that you think would fit that category? And when we did this the first time, it was fascinating to see what people brought. And what we learned is that these were opportunities for people to bring films that they've always wanted to show somebody that they couldn't show necessarily the people they worked with or their friends. They wanted to show to an audience that was educated enough to kind of watch and process this with them.
All right. Well, let's get an example here. This is a video from YouTube. This is Jonathan Lee Richards. I think we're going to have to set up all of these clips. So.
Yeah, exactly. this is a person who in 2006, since then, has filed 2,600 lawsuits. He was in prison for, credit card fraud, and he has been filing these insane lawsuits. And he documents these and talks about them on YouTube.
Here he is.
Jonathan Lee Richards seeks Freedom of Information Act, FOIA, 5 U.S.C. 552 Information Act about Jim Jones People Temple in Guyana. I was a former member to the Jim Jones cult. I've been trying to get answers for 30 years whether Jim Jones is my real father. My mother met Jim Jones in 1975 in San Francisco in pursuit of happiness. I was born in 1976, 12/27/1976, in the Napa Valley. Jim Jones took my mother and me to Guyana to Jonestown. I was an honor baby. I got a key to Jonestown. Jonestown issued my birth certificate and social security card. Jim Jones began to beat and punch me in 1978 to show off for the other cult members. I still have the bruises, and I was used for witchcraft by Jones. He stuck needles in me.
Okay, we get the idea. This is just filed a lot of lawsuits. But again, now, so there's a lot of wacky stuff out there. This happens.
Yes.
This one happens to be on YouTube. There is some value in these, though. The point is that there might be somebody somewhere who wants some aspect of this and the other films. And you know, you'd like to have an index to go find this thing.
Right. I mean, and that's – so YouTube creates this – it's very difficult from an archivist standpoint because there is so much content out there. And it's stuff that we're not going to know how to process and deal with in 20 years. Will it even be there? Will Google decide they don't want to do YouTube anymore because it doesn't make them any money? You know, and so what do we do with this? Do we pull this down? Do we talk about it? The person who's presenting this is a lawyer, and he's going to talk about some of the aspects of – this type of video and this person and why they are this person of note.
All right. Well, let's get another example. This one is the Forestry Service film. And again, maybe you should set it up for us before we hear it.
This is a film that is well-intended but poorly executed, made by the Forestry Service.
Here it is.
What's the good word this morning, Jim?
Not very good, Lonnie.
I just came from the courthouse. Seems as though someone's lodged a complaint against you. A motor says Lonnie jumped out in front of him the other day. He about run him over. The man's wife just about had a heart attack. She says she's never been the same since.
Lonnie accused them of throwing a lighted cigarette out of their car the other day. They swore it was a case of mistaken identity.
It was them, all right.
Well, anyway, Judd Saunders won.
No, that was a cigarette, all right. So, obviously, seeing this wouldn't help us at all, right?
Well, you get the full film is a mess. It's very, again, it's like, you know, trying to get people not to be very cautious about starting forest fires, but the way they do it, it's this narrative, it's this melodrama, and yeah, it's a mess.
Just not what, Dino Everett. So again, you're an archivist,
right?
So is there a value in somehow archiving this film, and then do you have to do a lot of work indexing maybe the thing that somebody might be looking for?
Yeah, I think with a lot of this material, it's finding the proper context for it. I mean, obviously, with the first clip, People's Temple, ironically, one of the most popular films at USC that we license clips from is a movie a student made about the People's Temple. So there's enough, you know, interest in that topic that I think that one could immediately find a home, you know, an interest where people would find a use for it. But yeah, I think it's really just finding, like, we should not be the judges of what's important and what is not important. We archivists, because 20 years from now, there may be a whole new wave of scholarly research that wants to go back to something that we thought was trash. Only now it's become very valuable and a missing piece to something. So I believe it's our duty to not be such purveyors of what is good and what is trash, and to just work as hard as possible to save most of this stuff because it has some value.
Well, I can think of sort of two examples. If we look at Jonathan Lee Richards, the cult guy, if you're doing research on all of the sort of the ancillary stuff, like what grew out of Jonestown and how many people wanted to attach themselves, if there's a phenomenon of people believing somehow that they were part of Jonestown, you want to document that. Every one of these films matters.
Right.
And if you want to look at the evolution of these kind of documentaries or films that, you know, a public service movies, going back to the bad ones is helpful, right?
Oh, certainly. Certainly.
Well, let's take another look. Now, this one is a video, again, going back to YouTube. It's both Hall and ASMR, Skip. You can tell us about all of that.
I have to look up what AMSR stands for.
No,
real
it's
quick.
ASMR.
ASMR.
I don't know either,
it is
so
this,
it's up to you.
It's these two phenomenons that are on YouTube that young people are into. One is a Hall video where people show what they bought at the mall that day.
Yeah.
And the other is this ASMR, which is this. It's supposed to create this tingling in your head when you watch it.
Autonomous sensory meridian response. Well, let's see if it happens to you.
Hey guys, I wanted to make another quick video for you. I recently went to Victoria's Secret and bought some makeup, and I also went to Sephora and bought some makeup as well, so I figured that I would do a little unboxing video and show you the different things that I bought.
This is a funny picture because I'm imagining people now driving on I-40 leaning forward to hear...
It made my spine tingle a little bit when I heard that.
Yeah, it makes mine ache to think that everybody cares about what you bought at the mall.
But it's a phenomenon, Frank. It's unbelievable.
Got to document it. And so those are some of the things. Dino, actually, you specialize in finding projectors in strange formats so that we can actually see these.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in a weird way, I love the bastard film formats. So, yeah, one of my areas is... We've kind of always thought of film to be 35 millimeter, 16 millimeter, 8, and Super 8 millimeter. But there have actually been like close to 100 formats over the years. And that's kind of my area where I'm fascinated by these things. And to me, digitizing that material removes the one thing that made it unique in the first place. So I'm actively out there taking this old film from whether it's 28 millimeter or 4.75 millimeter or 3 millimeter and then projecting it on its original equipment, whether it be 50 years old or 100 years old, so that people can see this stuff the way it was originally designed to be seen.
It's amazing, Frank. It really is to see him do it.
What's the wildest search you've ever been on?
Well, I mean, there's one that my wife likes to call the almost home wrecker, which would be the 4.75 millimeter widescreen, which was a poorly designed concept in 1956 to introduce widescreen to the home, but it was so small that it didn't matter that it was a rectangular image. It was just a grainy mess. Yeah. So there's only, from what I've found, three functioning projectors in the world. I have one of them. And then there's even fewer examples of film. And I had the film first, and I found the projector in New Zealand, and I had sort of worked on the guy for many years. Like, I got film. I can run it. You know, and then finally he said he would sell it. And so I went to the wife and said, you know, he's going to sell me the projector. What do you think I should do? And she said, I don't really think now's the time. And so I heard, get it immediately. So I had it shipped over.
This is the almost homewrecker part of it.
Right, right.
Well, yeah, there's a corollary now, I think, you know, talking about this technology that would put it on a wide screen, but it was too small to be useful. HDTV is a lot of that way, because now you can really see very bad television.
Right.
In all of its ugly mess.
Yeah, some things may not need that clarity.
Well, let's talk about I want to get another example in. This one I think is going to be pretty clear. This one is actually a creationist view, kind of how a creationist might explain dinosaurs. And so why don't we hear this clip? Because you got a problem. If you're a creationist and then you've got this kind of these time spans. So here's how they did it.
Look, Dad, a dinosaur puzzle. Jim knows how much I like dinosaurs. Thanks, Jim.
This dinosaur is called Tyrannosaurus.
Dad, did dinosaurs really live?
Yes, Bill. We know they once roamed the Earth because we found their skeletons.
How long ago did they live, Dad?
Some people say they lived millions of years ago. But they were among the animals God created on the fifth or sixth day of creation. That means that they were on the Earth with Adam and Eve, only thousands of years ago.
Then dinosaurs and people lived at the same time?
That's what the Bible says. And we found their footprints together in the Paluxy Riverbed near Glen Rose, Texas. The footprints show the trail.
The Bible is actually silent about Glen Rose, Texas.
Well, but, of course. Yeah.
And I just want to point out that we are talking about the Bastard Film Festival today on The State of Things. Skip Alzheimer's with us. What were you about to say?
Oh, just that this is a film strip from my collection. I've been collecting a lot of creation science films and film strips. And what's amazing is that film was made in the late 80s, but it sounds like it was made in the 40s or
1980s?
50s. Yeah.
Wow. Well, there you go. I mean, you got to look at if you're doing creationism, you got to explain some of these things.
Yeah.
And I think that's about as good a way as you're ever going to get. Dino, you're screening a film this weekend in which part of your anthology, right? And it actually is kind of the beginning of modern horror. Tell us about it.
Well, at USC, one of my quests when I took the job there was I grew up on genre films like horror and sci-fi. And so I knew that John Carpenter and Dan O'Bannon had gone to USC, and so one of my quests was to find their student films because they had never surfaced before.
I'm going to stop you there. John O'Bannon, John Carpenter, and yeah, so tell us about them. Who are
John Carpenter, who many know for the movie Halloween and Escape from New York and The Thing. Dan O'Bannon, who was the writer for Alien, Total Recall. He wrote and directed Return of the Living Dead. They sort of in the 60s met up at USC, and horror was still kind of like we thought of like the universal monsters and Frankenstein and things like that. And shortly thereafter in the 70s is when we came out with the maniacal serial killer model for horror movies. And there was a book by Jason Zinnemann, a New York Times writer, called Shock Value, How a Few Eccentric Filmmakers Conquered Hollywood and Invented Modern Horror. And so when I read the book, he kind of laid out this concept about USC and these guys meeting up at USC. And so I thought, ooh, this is a perfect vehicle to take a number of short films, put them into an anthology, and then get them out there. Because one of the problems as an archive when you're working with short film material is it's harder to get it out there to an audience because they're, you know, 5-10 minutes long. And so by compiling a bunch of these into a 80-minute program, it was an easier vehicle for me to get these things out for people to see.
Well, it's kind of interesting. You have we have the audio from John Carpenter's thesis film. In fact, Lady Madonna, it's not visual. You're just going to listen to it. It's piano music mostly. But it's similar to another film. I want to play it and talk about this connection and this transition between the monster from without to the monster from within.
I cannot tell you what an extreme pleasure it is for us to welcome you to St. Mark's. We get so few young ladies like yourself. This afternoon, it will be my duty and privilege to give you a sort of a miniature tour guide, if you will.
A little bit of John Carpenter's thesis film, Lady Madonna. What do we learn from that?
Well, I mean, in a way, this is a bastard film because I have – this is – in my project, this is what we call the missing film because I have the audio, but Mr. Carpenter has the picture elements, but he doesn't want anyone to see the movie. So – it fits into the bastard film where it's something that he made but he's embarrassed of or whatever and doesn't want anyone to see.
If you go into negotiations with him, leave your wife out of it is all I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
This one you've got to get it. Yeah. I want to thank you. Wish I had more time. Dino Everett is the Hugh M. Hefner archivist at the University of Southern California. Skip Elsheimer, the founder of AV Geeks, one of the organizers of the Bastard Film Encounter this weekend at King's Barcade in Raleigh. We've got lots of details at our website. Thank you.
And can I just add that tonight Shock Value is showing at the Colony?
Correct, in Raleigh.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And there's more information at our website, stateofthings.org. Lots more details there. I encourage you to visit the website as well. State of Things produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley's our technical director. Jess Clark, the intern. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.